Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
What is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home. They never go home, those boys.
And I said, I want to win the league, but I want to win it better. You can understand that, can't you?
Yes.
Good lad.
So he's almost like having a second captain in the team.
Second captain, first captain, whatever.
It has been one of the most remarkable 24-hour football news cycles in recent memory. The stories that a breakaway Super League was on the way came on Sunday. They were greeted with dismay and anger right through the day, all leading to the confirmation around 11 o'clock last night that the stories were indeed accurate. 12 clubs are prepared to take the leap as founding members of this breakaway competition, throwing the future of the game into turmoil. And shortly before 11 a.m. this morning, we had the first management casualty of the Super League era, as Tottenham Hotspur, one of the 12 founding members, announced that they had relieved Jose Mourinho of his duties. All of this is dealt with in today's Second Captain's Football podcast, which is out now and available to everybody. The first thing to say is that unlike on some occasions in the past when seismic football news stories have broken, Ken Early was not on any sort of holidays. Ken is there. Ken was present. Ken was correct. Well, he was certainly present. Hi, Ken.
Oh, and how are you doing?
You would have been kicking yourself if you'd missed all that, in fairness.
You probably would have been able to get me on Zoom, wouldn't you?
Oh, you see, no one's ever truly on holidays anymore. Yeah.
The tentacles now extend far and wide.
That is true.
Good luck, Ken. You'll never miss another football story again. What a pleasant surprise. What a pleasant relief that must be for you.
It is a relief.
Hi, Simon.
Hey, lads. How are you?
We're good. The reaction to this Super League idea continues to pour in from around the football world. Mesut Ozil, now at Fenerbahce, a long time at Arsenal, one of the founding members, says kids grow up dreaming to win the World Cup and the Champions League, not any Super League. The enjoyment of big games is that they only happen once or twice a year, not every week. Really hard to understand for all football fans out there. Ander Herrera, who is at PSG, which is interesting. They're one of the holdouts. They're one of the clubs who the other breakaway clubs want to be part of their gang, but so far they're resisting those calls. Come on, PSG, you can be with the cool kids. And PSG are like, well, just give me a second. Anyway, what Herrera says is, I fell in love with popular football, with the football of the fans, with the dream of seeing the team of my heart compete against the greatest. If this European Super League advances, those dreams are over. The illusions of the fans, of the teams that are not giants, of being able to win on the field, competing in the best competitions, will end. That was a long sentence. I love football and I cannot remain silent about this. I believe in an improved Champions League, but not in the rich stealing what the people created, which is nothing other than the most beautiful sport on the planet. And if I believe even the great Ian Holloway has had his say this morning.
Well, Fergal Kiernan tweeted something a couple of hours ago. Ian Holloway has just said this Super League business is a betrayal to the memory of Prince Philip. I'm not even fucking joking. So could this truly have happened? I think everyone just said, right, okay, fair enough. Maybe. No, it couldn't have though. He couldn't have said that. Ian Holloway on TalkSport this morning. Talk about sadness. I don't know about you, but I spent time watching the Duke of Edinburgh's funeral at the weekend, and for the first time in a long time, I was really proud to be British. And this morning, that's just gone away. That man was so selfless in his life, and I wanted us to come out of this pandemic caring about other people more than ourselves. And the opposite is happening.
Oh no, so, you did it!
Yeah, he actually did go there.
He did say it.
A pan-European elite. This is not, Owen, what Philippos von Schleswig-Holstein-Sonderberg-Glücksburg, who grew up, as Fintan O'Toole told us in the Irish Times last week, thinking himself Danish and who adhered to the Greek Orthodox Church in which his mother later became a nun, would have ever wanted. A man who went to school in Paris and Baden-Württemberg, a man born into an international elite, a footloose familial brand that provided at one time or another royal bloodstock for Denmark, Norway, Iceland, Greece and the UK, a man who was once, after his family's expulsion from Greece, a literal citizen of nowhere, effectively stateless until he was given a Danish passport. Disgusted at this elitist power grab, and he's not even cold in his grave yet, Owen. It's a bloody disgrace.
There is there is another view out there, though, a view that an email and certainly that I didn't get to in today's football podcast, so I will use it now in our mini pod. It's from Kiefer O'Boyle, Ken, if you'd like to answer this. For transparency, I was a long-time Man United fan, now lapsed due to consequences related
the
to
most
this
famous
email,
the
and
world.
I now support Hertha Berlin. Most people I have talked to or have aired opinions on Twitter have gone with the Gary Neville response that it's a disgrace, the team should be punished and we should wrestle back control from the powerful elites. My first thought is that these people have obviously not been watching football for the last three decades. Oliver Dowden, the British Culture Secretary, definitely hasn't watched much football when his view was this plan could create a closed shop at the very top of our national game. We can only assume Mr. Dowden believes the Premier League's own hype about being the best in the world and not like those one-team European leagues. It's one of the most laughably moronic and ignorant comments you'll hear. Nobody should be, on the topic I should say, nobody should be shocked or even vaguely surprised that super clubs are wanting this. I believe the outrage is pundits, fans and everyone receiving, this is an inverted commas, un-Sky Sports-like artificially hyped up view of what football has become, and they do not like what they see, which is that football is a closed clique, uncompetitive in most instances, funded by wealthy nation states with questionable human rights records.
You think our country's so innocent?
And where fans are increasingly and comfortably irrelevant. It would be interesting to hear your thoughts, but I genuinely think while most fans will hate the idea and some will abandon their teams, there will be many more that relish it. The best of the best playing each other every week, a constant stream of social media posts and debate where competition basically disappears but we are glued to it regardless. I'd like anyone to argue how it would look drastically different to the current Champions League. As Ken, Miguel and others have been preaching for years, this is a natural progression of the evolution of football, and organisations like Sky, BT, UEFA, FIFA, the Premier League and others are all culpable and responsible, whether through passive appeasement to these foreign entities from Qatar to Abu Dhabi or directly through unequal club funding and TV deals. Ultimately, they have allowed themselves to become bystanders while nation states, while state nations, oligarchs and multi-billionaires take hold. Whether we like it or not, this idea has been floated before, will be floated again and will eventually be brought in some form. One only has to look at the debt these 12 clubs have accumulated between them and realise that money is and will be the only thing that matters when formulating the future of what football competitions will look like. I look forward to your discussion and your views on the topic, says Kiefer O'Boyle.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with most of this email. I think a lot of what Kiefer is saying is true. I mean, there is a question there. I'd like anyone to argue how it would look drastically different to the current Champions League. Well, the most obvious difference is that it's much smaller. The Champions League has got 32 teams, actually 36 today, because they've just announced their reforms, in which there will be a couple of teams that didn't qualify that will just get into the Champions League anyway due to their overall history. That is now a rule in the Champions League, although maybe they're going to have to go along a lot further down the list of historic clubs to find those wildcard entrants than they thought they were going to have to. But the Champions League is more than twice the size, or almost twice the size. This is it's planned to be 20 at the moment, only 12 teams, and the 12 teams are from seven cities. You know, there's two from Manchester, two from Milan, two from Madrid, and three from London. Now, how wide is the appeal of this thing, really? I know that these clubs say, we're the big clubs, we're the only ones anybody cares about, we've got global following, blah, 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 blah. But, like, who is this ultimately being marketed? Like, the Champions League is sold all around Europe. I mean, they're looking, I imagine, at, like, Champions League TV deals. The thing is, everyone gets to participate in this. You know what I mean? And this current, this idea just seems laughably narrow and sort of and elitist.
Kiefer's idea seems to be that fans of the clubs involved, ultimately, while some will protest and some won't like it, a lot of them will be fine with it.
But I'm telling
you,
fam,
necessarily mean that it's going to be a great competition for people who don't support those clubs, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, exactly, you know. I mean, the whole thing is just a bit, it's just sort of small and like samey. I just feel as though Like, my criticism here sounds like, and I suppose it effectively is, a better designed European Super League, I think, might have more chance of success. I don't think this is a good design at all. I think it's like, I think it's terrible. You know, I mean, the other obvious difference is that the Champions League, you have to qualify for every year. You know, you need to perform at a high level to get into that. Whereas in this, 15 of the 20 clubs would be just permanent members, you know, which also seems like unfairness is just built into the very bones of this.
So you're not against
thing.
So you're not as annoyed.
Just to finish the point I'm making. I'm sure Kiefer's point is essentially that, well, look, it's already that way, really, because it's really the same teams in the Champions League every year. You know, you know, we all go through this charade saying, well, of course, everyone can compete, but really, look at the second round, look at the quarterfinals, look at the way the groups pan out, and it's always the same. It's always the same few teams. So, really, is there much practical difference? Well, I think the theoretical difference is also important.
The theoretical difference. What do you mean?
Well, you know, I mean, you're saying in practice this works this way, but it's not also that way. It's not enshrined in principle that it's only these teams. Maybe it is the same teams.
Yeah, the difference isn't just that Leicester might qualify once every 4 or 5 years. It is, you know, that is a fundamental difference. You know, that if you do have a good season, you know, if Moisey continues to sprinkle his magical Moisey dust,
a win,
that West Ham can get into the Champions League. That's it.
Like, well, they might. Murph, you know, there's going to be 5 floating places, so presumably the work of David Moyes will not be overlooked if this new competition is in place.
They need another London club. For balance, they'll need another London club as well.
But, you know,
I still feel as though we're talking about it,
like, as though we're almost talking about it in a way, like we're kind of going, yeah, this will happen. Like, is this really going to happen? Like, it's just a pig of an idea.
All right, well, we spent a long time talking about this pig of an idea on today's football podcast, which is out now, and it's a story that's not going to go away. I think any more developments in that will be covered on the World Service. We also talk a little bit about Jose getting sacked, which was somewhat swamped by the bigger picture, but that's all available for you right now. You've also got more podcasts during the week for €5 a month plus VAT. That's all it costs to become a member and hear all our episodes. You can do that on secondcaptains.com. We've got a really good conversation coming up on the Second Captain's World Service this week with 2 of our favourite guests. Many of you, I think, might have seen Andrew Trimble a few weeks ago. He was on the Claire Byrne show on TV speaking really eloquently. They were doing an entire show on the idea of a united Ireland, and Andrew Trimble had some really interesting stuff to say. This is a clip of what he was talking about.
A lot of people in Northern Ireland could potentially get to the age of 18 and meet a Catholic for the first time or a Protestant for the first time. And that's a bizarre... Northern Ireland is a unique place. It's a unique intertwined combination of identities, British and Irish, and I don't think not having that exposure to different perspectives and understandings, I don't think that helps, and I don't think that's healthy.
Yeah, Andrew was, I thought, really, really impressive in that conversation, and I suppose we talk about sports people speaking about getting outside their comfort zone and speaking about things, you know, things that are important societally and so forth. And that's something that he did there. So I'm interested in why he decided to go on that show for a start and also how he found it. But we also will obviously have more time to go into some of those subjects with him, including segregation in Northern Ireland in schools and sport and socially and all that kind of stuff. And Andrew's going to be joined by Oisin McConville. He's the other guest that I mentioned too. I'm sure we'll have plenty to say as well. This chat is obviously particularly timely with the recent trouble in the North and the issues underpinning that. So there's loads of great stuff going on at the World Service. Also, last week we had a really good chat with Lynn Cantwell about women's rugby, her role as the high performance manager in South Africa. But we also talked about the differing investment that different countries have put into the women's game. And Simon, we did have a fear. I mean, Ireland had done well in the opening weekend against Wales, but
yeah,
we didn't fall into the trap of hyping them up too much, because we always felt there was a fear that the gap would be exposed against France, against a semi-professional team, and I think unfortunately it was, because they put more than 50 points on us there on Saturday.
Yeah, and it's not as if they played well for the whole game against Wales. There were signs in the second half that they may have issues, that the French would capitalise on those. And the problem was, there was no other rugby or GAA on. The Premier League was pretty dull this weekend, and they got the most coverage I think I've ever seen them get all week, then on RT TV, you know, they're on podcasts and all the papers were covering it. And I wondered, did that impact them? Because as well as France played, Ireland didn't play well. They didn't play to the standard even they did against Wales. And I don't know if they still carry this sense of responsibility to sell the game. And they get so few chances to do that, then there's extra pressure on their shoulders. Now, they barely played in a year. and they're amateurs anyway, obviously. So they were always likely to make mistakes, but some of them were just kind of unforgivable. Like, say, the Bevan Parsons one in the first half where she carried and then she got stripped as she was landing, and then they just ran in the simplest looking try.
There was no sense of urgency. There was a weird one. That try is funny you mentioned that one, because that's the one that stands out in my mind, because the ball was turned over and it felt like it took a couple of seconds for all the Irish players to sense there might be a bit of danger from a chip over the top. Then the chip happens and suddenly Wales are away, you know. So now I don't know if like in amateurism, semi-professional, professional, I mean, like those kind of mistakes, I suppose, can happen no matter what sort of investment is in a team.
The mistake can happen. It was more the reaction. Yeah. As you say, it was very slow. I think if you're going to be the smaller team, then your kicking game, first of all, needs to be spot on, and it wasn't. And more importantly, the handling needs to be really good, because you have to keep obviously moving the point of contact, keep the speed of the game up, keep moving them around the field. You hold on to possession and you don't have to keep facing scrums the whole time. So you're kind of strengthening their game and weakening your game with all your handling errors. And for all the French power, and it was pretty obvious at times, it was actually often superior handling or poor Irish handling errors that secured those French tries. And it's so blatant, as we were saying last week, and Lynn was touching on, that they need girls playing from mini rugby and schools upwards. And I'd nearly be more interested in what the IRFU are doing about that side of things. And it's only anecdotal, but it appears like the GAA are miles ahead of rugby in getting girls involved, certainly at a young age, and then also holding on to them. So as much as we talk about the overall plan and David Nusafora and Anthony Eddy and the coaching and this current crop, unless it becomes almost automatic for a young girl to take up the sport, like it is for GAA in almost every town in the country, and it'd be great if they did that and rugby and basketball and all the other sports, but rugby just seems miles behind from what I can see in a few clubs and a few people that I've spoken to. There's a few clubs that are brilliant at it, obviously, but there's lots of big clubs that just aren't getting the numbers in at a mini rugby age.
Yeah, that's something you picked up on as well, I think, Murph, because we're not talking about early specialisation necessarily. It's not like you only have to play rugby from a young age, but a lot of the players out there, and traditionally it has been the pathway for a lot of Irish women's rugby players, is to not be playing rugby at all and to be playing other sports and then sort of come into rugby in their lives at some point.
Yeah, that's exactly it, you know, and so many of the backstories with these women's rugby players, like, are so interesting because they've played like a wide variety of sports at a very high level. And as you say, Owen, that's a very important point to make. Specialization is not the answer. Kids should be playing loads of sports kind of throughout their teenage years, but what we're talking about here is actually taking up rugby at 18 or 19 and still being able to get to this level. I mean, it's a sign that the sport is progressing, that that's just not really, that's not the level now. You mean, Simon, I think you mentioned there, Fiona Coughlin made this point in commentary that, you know, like the French players have grown up playing rugby. And so what you're talking about is, you know, you can take up sports at 19, 20 and your natural athleticism will get you a very long way, but you're actually talking about split second decision making that's actually only honed by playing hundreds of games, like just playing the sport competitively from an early age, so that you don't think about, you know, defensive decisions that you make in the line. It's just natural. You've played the sport for 15 or 20 years and you just know what to do. And you know, it's pretty unfair to ask you know, camogie players or ladies football players or athletes to be able to get up to that level when France and England have taken the sport on. And they've taken it on, as Simon says, by having a situation where girls at 7 or 8 can play rugby and can start getting really top quality rugby coaching at that age, because that's the way it is. That's the way the top level sport is. You know, you have to put in the hours. You know, you have to put in the hours. You have to be in a situation time and time and time again before it becomes second nature. Like at the level the French team were playing at on Saturday, if you have to think about where you should be defensively or what you need to do, like, the moment's gone. Forget about it. You know, because they've brought the sport on to a level that we're not at yet. So it's absolutely right that the Irish players deserve to be semi-pro. I don't think it's an either or. You have to invest in both.
True.
Because if you don't invest in the top level, then there's no real motivation there. I mean, if Ireland keep like forget about the senior team and just invest all of their money in kids rugby, then you know the product that kids are looking up to and aspiring to take part in is pretty bleak. So it's a balance. It can't be either or. It has to be both. And if it's kind of a half-assed job of both, then I think that's the way it has to happen. If money is as tight as we're led to believe, but one goes with the other. You can't choose one or the other, I don't think.
Yeah, it is a tricky spot they're in now at the moment, Si, because you made the point that I think it was a question you actually asked Lynn, that is it for the foreseeable future, is it going to be the case that Ireland, a good season for them is beating Wales and Scotland, and then depending who they're playing, you know, and then potentially picking off one of England or France in the year whenever they play them, which I mean, even that seems very optimistic at this point when you see what happened against France. I don't see when Ireland are ever going to pick off England or France again. So it is a kind of a tricky spot they find themselves in now.
Yeah, and at the moment, the Six Nations doesn't even feel like a competition. It sort of feels like a series of warm-up games before England play France. And in the short term, Ireland have to qualify for the World Cup. That's the really big one. There's a few quick fixes, like their defensive structure and their ability to just tackle one-on-one, even against bigger players. I think they can fix those relatively quickly, and I think they can qualify for the World Cup. But those are the big adverts for the game. Like, there was a lot of people watching that in RTÉ at the weekend. You only get so many of those chances, and you just hope the next one they do that they can at least perform to par. Not looking for them to beat England or France, as you say, but perform to par, play well on the day, and give that team a little bit of a game.
Well, it's not impossible for GAA players or for girls to come from that background and make it in another sport. As we've seen in the AFL recently, Orla O'Dwyer is the latest player to make a big splash there. She was playing the AFL Grand Final on Saturday morning for the Brisbane Lions against the Adelaide Crows. Brisbane had lost the last two Grand Finals and they were the underdogs coming into this game, but they won comfortably thanks in no small part to their Irish player.
O'Dwyer, yeah. Wide open goal square. How's this going to bounce? Is it going to pitch and roll? It will, but it'll head towards the pocket. Oh. What a goal!
Yeah, that was nice commentary of Orla O'Dwyer setting up one of the goals for Brisbane. She's the second Irish woman now after Ailish Considine, who had done it for the Crows to win the championship. So well done to her. We'll finish on that positive note. There's a hell of a football podcast waiting for everybody, and we will see World Service members again tomorrow. Thanks, Murph. Thanks, Ken. Thanks, Simon.
Thank you, Owen. Thanks, Owen.
Thank you, Ken. Ken. Thanks, Murph.
Thanks, Murph, Ken, Simon.
What is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
It is not war and death and famine. It's not that at all. It's the opposite of that. It's the persuaders of the world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.